Good morning. You are listening to NABWIC, the National Association of Black Women in Construction blog talk radio show, founded to increase the national awareness of black women in the construction industry. NABWIC is the charge and takes the charge for black women to advocate for further opportunities to its members. Our mission as a core foundation is to strengthen the building blocks of new educational, entrepreneurial, professional, and social network connections. The vision of NABWIC is to build long-lasting strategic partnerships with first-rate organizations and individuals that will provide groundbreaking and innovative solutions for Black women in construction and their respective communities. We invite you to call or text or email family, business associates, or friends and tell them that we are on the air right now, or they can join us on the internet by logging in to www.blogtalkradio.com/NABWIC or by phone at 714-459-3918 and press 1 to join our conversation with questions or comments.
Good morning and welcome to NABWIC Political Speaking Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Katrina Fenton, and I'm with Michelle Williams, community activist. We are excited this morning to have you on our show. And just to read a little bit more about your background, Michelle, we have you as a community activist for quite some time now, and you have stood up and spoke out boldly during the Trayvon Martin shooting incident in Sanford, Florida, back in March of 2012. Your comments in April of 2012 made national news, created a firestorm on the internet because of the biased news channels such as Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, and Sean Hannity, stating that the America has laughed in the faces of Black Americans thinking that they could just continue to get away with murder. Now, Michelle Williams has also feels along of the arm of the law enforcement in Florida has placed many innocent Black men and women and children into an injustice system of slavery, and she personally asked the question of who then stands up for us. Michelle's walk as an activist, she is boldly claims that she is not seeking friendship nor favors. She's demanding justice, but her blindfold back on and what's to do right by the American people. And that's why we're here on this call today, because they put us in and out of the system. We want to automatically restore rights in the Florida area. Michelle, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, good morning, Tina, and thank you so much. And I feel so humble and honored to be a guest on today's program. You know, I've never been one, you know, that speaks a lot about myself. I love for my work and my love and my compassion and my humanitarian that I have for the human race to speak for it, to speak for me, to give myself its own bio. I was born and raised in Haiti. We migrated and moved here to Tampa, Florida when I was 12 years old. And I'm just thankful that, you know, as one would say, I'm kind of cut from a different cloth, because the things that I see, the injustices that I see happening to Black and brown people, that's what got me involved. A lot of people know my story. When I was 19 years old, my uncle was tried and convicted of a murder that he did not commit. At the time, he was pointed out by a Caucasian victim, you know, at the time. But, you know, what the government failed to mention is that at the time of this murder, my uncle was actually over in Qatar, Iraq. He is a distinguished soldier, retired now in the United States Army. But, you know, it took me 5 long, vigorous years to get my uncle free from that, you know, from that incident. My uncle then turned around once he sued the state of Florida. He turned around and gave me the money that put me through college. I vowed to him, my great-grandfather, and my great-grandmother, and my two grandfathers who have now preceded me in death, I vowed to, you know, all of those giants of my ancestors and my family to remain humble while working with the community, never being judgmental, never turning anyone away, even if they just come to me to vent, you know, in the interim that I have to say, you know, I'm sorry, but you are the wrong party in this situation. I prided myself on being brutally honest. That's why a lot of people don't favor me in the community, because I don't hold any punches. I call a spade, whether you're white, black, green, purple, or blue. If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right. And what I've seen here lately, Ms. McClinton, in these last 5+ years, I've seen great injustices happening to black and brown people. So again, I thank you so much this morning for allowing me to have a voice on NatWick, you know, and I commend you for being one of our African-American black women in construction here in the Tampa Bay area. So that's just a little bit about me. I don't like to brag a little bit, and I'm just thankful that you're giving me a platform this morning to speak about the issues that are happening with the black and brown community here in the Tampa Bay area.
And I thank you very much. So is that the reason that you became a community activist, because of your uncle, that he went through that?
Yes, well, to be honest with you, Ms. McClinton, it actually started when I was at Brandon High School. You know, I seen some injustices happening to, you know, that they were at a high rate. Even then, I knew that, you know, the way that they were suspending and expelling black students then, you know, I had a problem with that. And I will always raise hell with the VPs, you know, the vice principals, and I would go talk to my guidance counsel all the time, and I would go talk to the principal, you know what I'm saying, at the time. And I'm just like, this isn't right. Why y'all keep kicking all these black kids out of school? Black kids need an education. We want education, you know, even back then. So it kind of started, you know, and, you know, seeing my, I come from a family of humanitarians. You know, my mother, you know, when she married, my dad, the sequel. I hate using the word stepdad, so I call him my dad, the sequel. So when she met my dad, the sequel, she, you know, that's what we, you know, I come from a family, like I say, of humanitarians. You know, growing up, I have an extended range of 49 sisters and brothers that my mom and dad, who are not biologically my mom or dad, but they helped raise these children in the community. You know, Tina, it was at a point, you know, my mom and dad, you know, they were fortunate enough, you know, my childhood came up, you know, in Claremel. Then we moved from there to a bigger home when I was getting ready to enter into the eighth grade. And so we were able to get, you know, a bigger, beautiful home in Brandon, Florida. But I always found myself having all these families, you know what I'm saying, that came and stayed with us. And no one argued, no one fussed, no one fought about anything. It was just like the pool. When you get on your feet, you know what I'm saying, in 3 to 6 months, you leave. And comes another family. And that's what I come from, Tina. And those are the type of backgrounds that I want to see happening, you know, here in the Tampa Bay area and abroad. You know, they always say that you have to start at home cleaning up. So Tampa is my home, you know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to help clean up Tampa. If I have to be that radical noisemaker and rattle some feathers, you know what I'm saying, and shake some water off their backs, I mean, it is what it is. But in the interim, that's what really, really caused me to be an activist. Things that I seen happening when I was in high school, and the biggest cause was what I seen, the great injustice that happened to my uncle when he was accused of murder and he hadn't committed it.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting story that you have, in the background you have, in the family that you came from. So I wanted to know, what is the importance of restoring the right in Florida? Could you give us a little bit more detail?
Okay, as we know, Tina, in the state of Florida, you have to, if a person goes to prison in the state of Florida, or if a person finishes their probation sentence, they have to wait anywhere from 5 to 7 years to be restored their civil rights, which is a disgrace. Because basically what the state of Florida is saying, hey, we know you're going to eventually mess up because you're a career criminal, that you have no interest of ever, ever, ever turning your life around. You have no interest of ever, ever turning your life around, and you're just not going to do right. Well, in that case, there's a young, beautiful black man. His name is Mr. Desmond Meade. He started the Florida, the FRRC, the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Desmond Meade, for the last 4 years, has taken on the big government, the local government, the state government, and the federal government, and said, "Look, here is this petition. He received enough signed petitions 2 years ago to have the initiative to go before the Florida Supreme Court. The Florida Supreme Court told Mr. Desmond Meade, hey, you are absolutely correct, young man. You are onto something." So now Desmond Meade He had to receive 700,000 signatures to in order to get it on the ballot for 2018. Well, I'm actually on my way now to meet with Mr. Desmond Mead over at 4711 North Central Avenue. That's the Seminole Heights Library, because he's there now to disclose the number that he's now over 900,000 plus signatures. He's almost at 1 million signatures. So he's gotten more than what the law asked him. He's gotten more than what the law even asked him to obtain. But, you know, but in the state of Florida, Tina, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Under our former governor, Charlie Crist, he had automatically right restoration. Under this new administration, Governor Rick Scott, he's only given, I think it's a little under 2,500 people their rights back. In the 8 years that he's been tenure here as the governor for the state of Florida, this is a huge problem, and this is a ballot initiative that we have to continue to move forward, because it has become a plight that if you don't have your civil rights back, you can't vote in issues. And this has been the Jim Crow-ism that we have seen across America, just not in the state of Florida, that the plaguing of the black race with our voting rights is always such a problem. And I mean, what I would like for, you know, my message to remain the same is that we have to understand our power. Blacks, we have power. And when we show up and we organize, there is no stopping us. So, Tina, I'm just overwhelmed. I don't want to just take over your show this morning, because I could just talk about this all day long. But I do thank you again this morning for allowing me to have this platform.
And I thank you for coming on the show. It's so interesting that he has the numbers that will put the petition on the ballot so we can vote for that. So, and also, Rick Scott, his term is over. It's about over, correct?
Right. That's right.
So once we put this on the ballot, and if it is voted in, will the next governor be able to take it off?
Well, you know, that's why we have to make sure that we get Andrew Gillum. He would be the first black governor in the state of Florida. You know what I'm saying? Andrew Gillum is currently the mayor for Tallahassee, Florida. You know, and you know, we have to get a governor in there, whether it be Andrew Gillum or another governor, but we have to let them know that these are the issues that are plaguing the black race, and we're not going to stop. And I need for blacks to understand, you know, our race to understand that, hey, we have power. And I don't know about them, but I'm using my power. I call it girl power.
Yes, Michelle, ma'am. I have a question. This is, of course, NABWIC, the National Association of Black Women in Construction, politically speaking. What benefit is it to restore your rights as it relates to the construction industry? If you can please elaborate on that so people can understand the importance of trying to automatically have civil rights restored. Your views on that.
That is, you know, to me, that is absolutely a no-brainer. When it comes to security, let's just say this for instance, Ms. McClinton owns Fresh Start Development, Inc. And if Tina decides that she gets a contract over at the Port of Tampa, that means that she can't hire someone who has turned their life around and who has turned their life around and they're unable to get a TWIC security clearance. If Tina got awarded a contract with the Department of Defense over at MacDill Air Force Base, she couldn't hire the everyday, you know, Jane and John Doe's from the street to go over there to be labor, just general labor, because this is what's plaguing, you know, saying this is what's plaguing, you know, the community right now. People can't get the jobs. People want the jobs. But, you know, they're labeled as convicted felons. So, again, this is why, you know, whatever I can do on my part to help NABWIC bring this issue forward to say, hey, look, we are construction women and we are construction companies. And we need to hire general laborers. And we have contracts that are being awarded to us, but we can't hire general laborers. We can't hire those people that are in the community that we come from because they're labeled as felons.
this is something that we have to keep pressing. You all, I have done a little bit of research on NatWick. And when I tell you, every time I see Katina's Facebook social media page, I just scream with joy to say, that is girl power. This is women power. These are Black women doing the damn thing, as we would say. So it is the utmost importance that we continue to push this initiative forward, because right now construction companies can't hire, you know, for big contracts, big security contracts, because people can't pass the background. You know, there was an issue over at the Tampa International Airport where Black contractors were being awarded contracts, but they were trying to reach back in the community to hire those that looked like them, and they were unable to do that because they couldn't pass the national security clearance. This is why it's important that we get this on the ballot for 2018. And this is why it's important that women, beautiful Black women such as NatWick, that you all continue to raise your voices and move political. You know, I always tell people the best move is sometimes that silent move. No one will ever see NatWick coming if they got involved with something.
Yes, that is very, very so much true. And it was a great example that you gave for if we got a contract and we can reach back in community and hire some of these people that want to change their lives around. So that is my goal for 2018, to bring one, teach one, to move them in the right direction so they will be able to stay off the street, stay out of jail, and be able to raise their families as they want to.
That's right. That's right. That is absolutely right.
So is there a link if someone just wanted to go on and find the link and sign a petition? Is there a link out there that they can do so?
Yes, they can go to www.frrc.com, or I think it's either ORG. But if they go on Google, just a Google search, and just type in Florida rights petition, it's automatically going to come up. They just they can fill it out. It's a PDF fillable form. They can fill it out and print it and just drop it in the mail. Drop it in the mail, or either get it to you, Tina, and we'll get and I'll make sure that it gets over to Mr. Meade.
Okay, so with that being said, when is the deadline to sign this petition?
We have until the end. I think we have until December the 21st. Don't quote me on that, but I think we have until the end of the year to get this petition signed.
Okay, I do have a question from the audience. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Robin Donaldson, and I'm a fellow NABWIC member, and I also am a resident of Tampa. And listening to your interview, first and foremost, I am in awe because I knew your name but never knew your story. And again, thank you for coming on and being a voice for people who don't have one. My question would be, I know you talked about the importance of restoring the civil rights as it relates to working and how working creates jobs create the it's just really a big circle. So if I have someone, again, who wants to restore their rights, I understand there's an application process, but what are they to expect? How long does the process take? And are there certain circumstances that would not allow a person to get their civil rights above and beyond the 5 to 7 years that they state that it should be in effect?
Well, I can tell you right now, Robin, and thank you so much for that question, because it's very, very important. Under the leadership of Governor Rick Scott, he has made this process a lot more tedious, and he's made it a lot more heinous with getting your rights restored back. The waiting list right now is anywhere from 2 to 3 years, which is horrible, and I believe that they're doing this on purpose. The other process to all of this is that once the person fills out the application and they go through the process, they have to, you know, do their fingerprint on their fingerprint card, they have to pull their background, they have to do all of this
You have to do all of this, all of this stuff to just to start the process. So I always tell people, if you get with the right group or the right coalition to help you, it's always better, like Mr. Meade did when he sent in thousands for people to get their rights restored back. The first part of the process, Robin, is what they do. They used to just do a local background check just to make sure that you didn't have any, you committed any new crimes and they went unscathed, something that they missed or anything. Now what they do, Robin, they do a national search, which I think is ridiculous. I really think it's ridiculous. And then they turn around and they do a level two background check with the FBI. Okay, taxpayers are footing all of these investigations, and taxpayers don't even realize that. Taxpayers don't even realize that they're spending more than $1 billion yearly just for these investigations, because these are some, you know, you can't tell a person who owns an investigative company how much they can charge you per background check. You know what I'm saying? You can charge $200 or $300 per person, you know, and by the time you get 12 and 15,000, you know what I'm saying? You like the street say, you not hit a lick. You know, but this has become, it's very hideous. A very tedious process, Robin. And you know what it does, Robin? The general public, those who want their rights restored back, you know what they do? You have those that just turn their lives around and they just live the right way. And they live under the color of the law, you know, being good, productive citizens because they just don't want any trouble. But Robin, we all know, you know, as blacks in America, there is still no great justice for us to receive. None. Not even when it comes to a mere simple thing like having your rights to vote.
Michelle, this is Jackie. I'd like to ask a question as well. I'm Jackie Perry from Northeast Florida, and I want to commend you along with Mr. Desmond Meade as well for the outstanding work that you're doing. And I am rooting with everybody else that when the Supreme Court rules on this, that it'll be really favorable because it's something that we really need. But I wanted to ask a different type of question because you're a community activist and this is an important thing that happens after someone, of course, may become incarcerated. But for those folks who just live every day with the threat or the risk of being incarcerated, mainly our young folks who may just get pulled over or approached by the police for jaywalking or something like that. What do you say to young people who may face those kind of risks? What do you say to them that could encourage them and help them maybe stay out of the jail or the prison system?
Miss Jackie, you know what? When I tell you, you ladies are really getting my blood pumping this morning. And by the time I get to this meeting, I'm going to be on fire. This is the thing. This is my answer to that, Miss Jackie. As a black mother with a 23-year-old beautiful black king who's a father of three beautiful little black kings, I should not have to sit in a daily conversation to say, son, make sure that you have your seatbelt on. Make sure that your tag light is, the bulb is not blown. Make sure that your brake lights is working. Because these are not the conversation that white women are sitting around having with their children. See, mm-hmm. white America doesn't have to have these conversations with their children. But because of the fear of losing our children to all of this gunplay that we've seen across the United States with police officers getting paid vacations because they've murdered one of our black kings or our black little queens or our baby daddies or our best friends or uncles or cousins or nieces or nephews, we have to have this conversation. This has been a growing conversation in the black race since my great-grandfather, you know what I'm saying, was alive. You know, these are conversations that we have to continue on a daily basis to have. We just had a local radio program here in Tampa on WTMP 1150 AM this morning where the chief of police, David Dugan, who just became the chief like less than a couple of weeks ago, he was asked the question this morning, you know, what is he going to do about the racial biases that, you know, that comes from the Tampa police officers? Because they do. They racially profile. They still racially harass. And, you know, the thing about it is, Miss Jackie, I can't believe that police officers are still pulling the oldest trick in the book
oh, your tag light was out. So you know what I tell officers? See, I got a reverse camera. So by the time they get to my driver's side window, I say, now, I want you to tell the truth because I'm going to win in court. Never mind, Miss Williams, have a good day. You know, it looked like your light was flashing and it went off. No, you still lied. I'm just still going to go down to internal affairs because you just racially profiled me and you just harassed me. But these are the conversations that we have to have with our kids, Miss Jackie, because we have to let our children know, just like white women, white parents say, don't talk to the police. Don't talk to the police. They don't have to talk to the police. They do not have to talk to the police. And that's what I want our young, beautiful kings, and I want our young, beautiful race to understand, and our young, beautiful little queens to know. If the police stop you and you know you have not committed a criminal act, you don't have to say anything to them. You don't have to say anything to them. I tell them, thank you so much. I tell them just like they tell their children. If the police ever stop you, you better call me. You better not say anything to anyone. You better just call me. So guess what? Mm-hmm. That's what I tell my son. And my son, I think the police department know here in Tampa, they better not mess with my children. Because, you know, I told them, if you ever want to send me to prison, that's going to be a reason why.
Well, thank you for answering that. I appreciate it. And that is the reality that we live in. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's very much the reality that we live in these days. And it's disheartening to, you know, our race that we have to live through these times. But we have to come together as a community to make something happen. And most people don't realize that we have to become one as a race to move anything. And we do have the power, like you said, Michelle, to do that. My question to you, how, as far as the petition goes, how we have the signatures now, so it can go on the ballot. Do you think anything will stop this going on the ballot for 2018?
The only thing that I think that they're probably going to pull, Katina, Miss Jackie and Miss Robin, is that the reason why Desmond is still collecting the signatures and he's trying to get over a million, because we all know the way the government, you know, we already know the way Lucifer works. See, Lucifer don't work overtime. He just works all the time. So the reason why we're making sure that we get more than a million signatures is because they're going to say, oh, no, this was a bad signature. Oh, no, this person signed the petition twice. You know, it's always something with them. It's always something with them. So to counteract everything that we know that the devil is going to come with, we're just going to make sure that we have all our P's and Q's intact.
Yeah, so that's very vital to make sure we don't have anyone sign that can't sign right now. Make sure that we don't have any double signatures. So with that being said, we want to put out there the link again, and anybody that they can go to get the petition and sign it. Could you give us that information as well?
Yes. Again, the petition website is www.frrc.org and frrc.com. The PDF, it's a PDF petition form. You can fill it out. It's fillable. Just fill it out with your voter registration, your date of birth, and print it. And when you print it, please make sure that you sign it. That's so important. Please make sure that you sign it, put it in the mail, or either get it over to Katina, Miss Jackie, or Robin, or even myself. Tina, you can give out my phone number if anybody wants to call to get involved, because we still have, you know, several weeks left that we can get this petition. And I know that we were able to do this. I mean, look. I mean, who would have ever thought that this young black man, and you know what I'm saying, out of Miami, Florida, would have been able to raise almost a million signed petitions to say, hey, no, we got a million people in Florida that agree with this. And it's a shame, because did you know that in the state of Florida, there are 3.9 million convicted felons and people with the status of felon on them? That's 3.9 million voters of people who can't vote. 3.9 million people who don't have their civil rights given back to them. 3.9 million people who can't even exercise their Second Amendment right to tote a gun. And I believe in gun rights. Yes, I do. You know, so we need to, you know what I tell people, I wish we would have started with this initiative ballot thing. If you are a convicted felon and you got a job, and you're a convicted felon and you got a legal hustle, a car wash, a barbecue stand, you know what I'm saying? Don't pay no taxes. Can you imagine how we would cripple the state of Florida if felons don't pay taxes? That will cripple the state of Florida. And sometimes that's what you have to do. You have to hit people in their pocket to make a statement. Because, see, the only two languages that white America understands is violence and taking their money away from them.
You're so right. So right on that. So
that's the only two languages that they understand.
Right. What I want to also know is, what are your favorite two books to read?
Well, a lot of people don't know, Tina, a lot of people don't know that I've read the Bible 12 times. I've studied the Bible. I actually have a bachelor's degree. I studied theology because I've always been intrigued on how white America continues to pray to God and pray in the Bible, but turn around and have such evilness. And I've always wondered why that was. And then my second favorite book is anything that Michelle Alexander has written. Anything that Michelle Alexander has written. She has been spot on about everything, all of these injustices that continue to plague the black and brown race. But when it comes to the Bible, you know, one thing that I know for certain and two things for sure, when you start talking about God in front of the white race, they automatically start to get, you know, they start to straighten up because they don't want to be punished.
Can you name one of those books by that author so the audience can know, can Google her and see what she's written?
Michelle Alexander, you can get her book, The Penal Code, Injustices Against Black America, Being Black in America. I mean, she has written so many books. Like, I mean, you just Google her name and a slew of titles are going to come up.
Okay, great. Well, we want to thank you for coming on the show and spending your precious time with us today. And thank you explaining the good information about the petition so we can get that out there. And we want to just thank you for allowing us to be a voice and move this petition right along. And also, we want to invite you to our annual meeting. In January 17th, we have a free reception, and we will send you the link to sign up. And also, there's also an annual meeting at the same time will happen January 18th and 19th. We want to put it out there that we would love to have you, and thank you for being on our show.
Thank you again. Thank you again, Tina. Thank you, Ms. Jackie. Thank you, Ms. Robin. And like I say, you know, with me, the order of the day is forward. People ask me, how can I continue to move forward when I see so much, when I hear so much, and when I know so much? And my great-grandfather, you know, when he was in his latter days before he died, he made me promise that I would, you know, like I say, not seek friendship nor favor. And he made me put blinders on. And he always promised me that the order of the day is forward, that I was never to look down on my people and I was never to not reach back. And my great-grandfather, you know, I've shared it on social media because the news media was just like, oh, how can you be so critical against white people when your great-grandfather was white? So I went ahead and put it out there. You know what I'm saying? This is why I do what I do, because this is what these men taught me. They knew that y'all was racist. That's why they taught me to fight against racism. So, again, Ms. Katina, Ms. Jackie, and Ms. Robin, thank you so much for having me on as a guest. But like I say, the order of the day is forward with me. I look forward to meeting with you ladies again. And if there's ever anything that you ladies need me to investigate or research or you need some secondhand knowledge on, I mean, firsthand knowledge on, please just go. Feel free to give me a call, because I do have attorneys that work for me pro bono who are criminal defense attorneys. They're contract attorneys. They just basically do the works. So whatever you guys need for me to help you all do, I'm there for you.
This concludes our show. Thank you for listening to NABWIC, the National Association of Black Women in Construction. For more information about NABWIC and our membership, please visit us on the web at www.nabwic.org. We are the voice of Black women in construction. Have a great and prosperous day.